what's more worrisome to me isn't the sharpness of these places. It's just like the leash has been exponentially cut. Hey, what's up, everybody? GP13, one of my favorite types of episodes. I actually had wanted to do these a little more frequently, but the Twitter Q&A. So I posted on Twitter yesterday asking for some podcast questions. I got a lot of really good ones. And yeah, let's just shoot the shit and go over some of the questions. I think this is actually going to be hit on a lot of topics that, you know, I would have otherwise wanted to talk about. So this is perfect. So I'm starting from the top. There's the one I posted, which was someone in my DMs asked if I'd rather invest 100K in Thrive or units. Very funny question. I think in either situation, the 100K is gone, but I don't know. I guess it has half a chance with Thrive, maybe. I don't know. Both are terrible options. Question number two from Absolutely Alpha. What is the optimal bankroll to make the switch from focusing on growing and high ROI to maximizing dollars profited? Okay. So I think what Absolutely Alpha is asking here is, it's an interesting question, because I think you should almost always be focusing on maximizing dollars profited, but it changes during different stages of your career, right? So I kind of think this is what he's getting at, but let me just walk through my interpretation of the question. So early in your career, you have a small bankroll, right? Let's say it's $2,000. At a $2,000 bankroll, the optimal thing to do is go get deposit bonuses. You can, you know, certainly arbitrage, like full arbitrage opportunities matter, you know, mean a lot more to your bankroll there too. If you're doing anything risk-free, you'd probably want to be hedging it with the other side, because some of the risk-free bets get pretty high up there. So, you know, a risk-free bet could be $1,000 with a small bankroll. You know, you're not going to let that fly on a golf outright like I might, which would be optimal at a bigger bankroll, or optimal mathematically, but you're going to want to get out there and, you know, get as much promo and deposit money as you can. And then what do you do next? I mean, that's the tricky question. I still think at that point, you probably want to do more top-down strategy. You want to prove this concept that you can be a winning bettor, see some go in, you know, see some go through the hoop, as they say, and then build the bankroll to where you have a bit of a foundation. So this is still, you're doing top down, you're doing, you know, bonus plays. You might be arbing, you might be, you know, just doing, you know, you might be betting stale lines, whatever it is. And then you start to get to a point where what's next, right? And how are you going to maximize dollars profited? So I still think up to this point, you're still maximizing dollars profited. But when do you start turning it into an operation, right? So when do you really put the hammer down? I think about 100K is a really big turning point in your bankroll size. Maybe even 50K, where you go from kind of being able to bet into any market, or a lot of markets for a decent amount of size, to now having to think about partnering up with people. Getting down becomes a lot more difficult. You're never getting your full size on props or niche sports and whatnot. So that's when you're going to start investing money, investing time into things that aren't just becoming a good bettor or just growing your ROI. So to me, you know, I would just put your head down and grind probably up till about 50K bankroll. Let's say you win like 100 grand betting. You spend some of it, pay taxes. You got 50K left over. I think that's about the time when you have to start evaluating what's next. And if you're going to take that jump to now start thinking about, like Absolutely Alpha says, maximizing dollar profited instead of like upping your ROI, or, you know, getting better as a one-man show. It's going to start to involve other people, start to involve making connections. And the game is kind of changed around that like 50 to 100K bankroll size. But before you get to 50, I would say that just do the basics, right? Do it, and you can do it on your own, right? So prove the concept, grind it up to 50. Once you get there, then you have to decide if you want to take that next step. Next question from the DGen. Great Twitter account, by the way. Very funny. When is the Circles Off collab coming? I don't know. I love Circles Off. I think there's some of the best Circles Off episodes have been instrumental in my betting process. I can name a couple off the top of my head. There's DeRosa, the Pinnacle trader. That was a recent one. Shipper on there was really good. AD, Abnormally Distributed, was really good on there. And there's more, but it's a great podcast. I would love to collab with those guys if they're interested. We got Doing Swimmingly. How much longer do you think the current DFS wave of easy profitability will last? What do you think the next step for people who currently mostly play DFS should be once they either lose legality, like we're seeing in places like Florida, or just the books become too sharp for an easy win? So even during the DFS, what I would call like the DFS boom, which would have been 2022 and 2023, I think would be the years where you could make 100K playing DFS. It's not DFS. It's, you know, forced parlay, prize pick style games, right? It's sports betting, but it was very soft, very easy to beat. There was tons of correlation, like tons of easy correlation spots that you could play, and you didn't need to be particularly sharp as an originator, even like a market participant. It was some of the easiest money you'll see made gambling. So the easy profitability in my mind is basically over. Now, it doesn't mean that the sites are sharp. I don't think they're like actually that sharp, but they just have brought the hammer down so hard since the glory days where you could, you know, I'm trying to think my Prize Picks account. I think it was up like 30K. My Underdog account was up like 80 or 90 or maybe 100, something crazy. And these were just my accounts, right? I wasn't, you know, betting through partners or anything. And now, I mean, it's just impossible. Underdog went like a year and a half without limiting anybody. So what's more worrisome to me isn't the sharpness of these places. It's just like the leash has been exponentially cut down. So I'd be hard pressed to imagine that you could just like take a new Prize Picks or a new Underdog account and turn it into five figures. I think Underdog maybe, but it would take some time. They only, if they label you sharp, I think they let you bet about $300 a day. So it's a battle out there, man. It's a battle. So, you know, I think the DFS boom is over, and partially it's due to the shit that they're in, which is they're getting kicked out of states left and right. They're losing a ton of revenue. Certainly, I don't really know what's next for them. Like, I don't even know if they're technically like in customer acquisition phase, or they're trying to pivot to something or sell their technology or get licensed as a gaming operator. Some of the bigger ones, like Underdog, just got a license in North Carolina. I'd be interested to see what Prize Picks does. I'm sure they've kicked the tires on that. But yeah, I think the DFS wave's done. And what should you do? Well, the good thing about the forced parlay sites is they're sports betting. So you still have the same skills. You're a sports bettor. If you were winning at those, you can win against traditional sports books. But it's a different ecosystem. There's going to be more, first of all, not that correlation doesn't exist, but it's not obvious. There's like the DFS space was crazy because people would literally post correlated slips on Twitter, which was bananas. Talk about correlation openly. Talk about correlated strategies openly. And still, it would take months to get nerfed, right? In traditional sports betting, if somebody has a correlated strategy, has found a correlation advantage at a traditional sports book, they're not going to tell you about it. I certainly don't, you know, the ones I found don't get published anywhere. That's between, you know, me and my team. And you have to have a lot more domain knowledge or be kind of a really sharp modeler of correlation to figure it out. It's not going to just be as easy as quarterback over passing yards, receiver over receiving yards, you know. It's just not as easy as that. So if you had a correlation advantage, but it was kind of just tailing people or using other Discord, seeing slips from Discords and doing obvious stuff, it's going to require you to dig deeper, find one sport, figure out if there's maybe some correlation involved that the books aren't taking into account. But most likely what you're going to end up wanting to do is kind of start from the bottom again. You're going to be start from the bottom. You're actually going to, I would say, start from the top, go top down, get an odd screen, start betting into stale lines, you know, just again, seeing some go through the hoops. If you're in Florida, you only have Hard Rock and then the offshores. Hard Rock, BetOnline, Bovada. See if you have any friends in other states. And one thing that you could do is start to work on, you know, finding a winning strategy that's not super time sensitive. Then you can kind of work with anybody. People who have accounts will want to get down for you. But they're not going to want to get down for you if your strategy is after Pinnacle moves, BetRivers still hasn't moved, so you bet BetRivers, right? So you're either going to have to develop some type of robust strategy, or you're going to have to make do with whatever limited sportsbook options that you have, trading a top-down approach that honestly won't last a super long time. So whenever people ask about longevity, I mean, I think there's a few ways to do it, but basically the ways to have longevity in this game are: one, get a lot of accounts. You're very, very valuable, right? So if you are somebody who can get money down, you will always be valuable. Or two, be a good originator, right? Start a syndicate. Then the people who have accounts will want to bet for you. And those are really the two long-standing jobs on the betting side of the counter. And, you know, I mean, you could be a lone wolf originator for sure, too. You don't have to have a syndicate. But you basically, I would say you have to eventually pick one or the other if you want to do this for a long time. Okay, and then I get asked a question about the NFL draft and how to deal with draft props. They mentioned the Will Levis Reddit situation last year, which was pretty wild. I would read up on that just for entertainment value. But I don't know anything about the NFL draft. I've never placed a bet on the NFL draft, and I don't really plan to this year. So my, if I were to, I would try and find somebody who knew what they're talking about, which isn't me. So I'll refrain from answering that one. The next question is from JB plus EV. In your opinion, where are the best sites / data one can use when trying to originate? Okay. Well, first of all, the thing you have to have is ChatGPT. That's a non-negotiable. Non-negotiable. It is literally the best deal in the world, especially if you're trying to do any type of programming or data analytics, which is, you know, a massive part of originating, right? So you have to get ChatGPT. That's an order. You know, if you're not getting ChatGPT and you're doing this, it's crazy, crazy to me. But the past that, what are the best sites / data one can use when trying to originate? I mean, it's obviously like sport specific for data, right? Like if you, there is in my Discord, actually the thing I'm trying to do, if you haven't checked out GP Academy, which is, I'm just trying to create a kind of a community that answers this question, which is, you know, I'm giving lessons and videos and many different facets of betting, but one of them that's not really covered most places is how to get started with originating. So if you're looking for that info, you know, and you haven't checked out GP Academy, I would highly recommend you check out the free trial, because I literally just did a class on intro to bottom-up betting there. And I think it fills a void, because I never found a class or a site that really walked me through exactly how to originate. So that was kind of the one of the reasons I started it. But as far as the data goes, instead of the information on how to originate, it's the data, I mean, you know, it's going to come from all over, right? And the harder the data are to get, the more valuable usually they will be. So, you know, you'll be using APIs, and that's totally fine, but I would recommend figuring out some way to scrape, to web scrape some data that might not be known by your competitors, right? So you're going to be taking in all sites, all sources. It's really hard, and it's going to take a ton of time. So there's not, you know, there's, yeah, I don't, it's hard to answer this question, because I don't really think, I don't think it's like the right question. But, you know, any data, you want all of, you know, you have to form a hypothesis to figure out like what you're even testing, right? So what data, what type of database, what do you need in your database to answer the questions you're asking, right? Okay, next question. What are your opinions on using P2 accounts? What do you think about some content creators not being completely transparent about using them? I find that lots of people in the live ARP community don't make it clear that your accounts will get limited and just want OJ referrals. Bang, bang. So P2 accounts, it's interesting. I, you know, when I was starting, these were called beards or whatever, but it seems like the new term is P2, and it's basically using somebody else's account. So my thoughts on this are, you know, I try never I never control, click, own an account that's not my own. What we do is, you know, it's very much bottom up focused, and we give out plays to movers and people who have their own accounts, and they click the bets in themselves. And, you know, we get a percentage of overall overall winnings. It's, you know, we're respectful to the TOS. They own the accounts. They control the accounts. They click in the bets. So, you know, my opinion has always been, I'd rather not have to be remoting into other people's accounts and whatnot. But I obviously know lots of people who do it. My understanding of the legality of it, I think it must be legal because people talk about it pretty openly, but I'm not 100% sure if it is. So definitely not legal advice, or don't quote me. As far as the odds jam, yeah, I mean, yeah, I think odds jam is not upfront about the fact that you'll get limited very quickly when you use their tools, especially the live arbitrage tools, 100%. And it's obvious it's to sell more subscriptions. Like, there's no, it's obvious. Like, it's not a, it's not even a secret, but I know that they don't like when their content creators say anything about getting limited. And yeah, I mean, I think that they should be more upfront about that. Everybody involved should be more upfront about that. And obviously, like, when somebody's using, you know, P2 accounts, they probably don't want to publicize it because it is, it's a gray area, right? Again, I'm not like the expert on this, right? We tried to set it up. So we're literally not controlling, ever controlling another account. That was just kind of our goal from the start. However, if, you know, they are using P2 accounts, they probably don't want to just tell everybody that, you know, maybe they'd answer you if you DM them or whatnot, but doesn't really do the content creator any favors. I don't think it's necessarily because they want to sell OJ referrals. I don't think they would say that they were using P2s anyway, even if they weren't trying to sell referrals, but certainly just because it doesn't really help them. It, you know, it's still a murky area. But yeah, I mean, clearly the odds jam model, the more people that they get onto a tool, the less valuable the tool is, right? So, you know, if the more people are on it, the more quickly they get limited, the less valuable the tool, technically, the less you should charge, which is not a good business model. So there's a lot of conflict within that whole ecosystem that you know, one of the reasons why I don't have an odd screen. Okay, and then we talk about another P2 question from Stealth. The first one is from Newbie Bets. So from Stealth, we have you had P2 accounts with randoms you've met online, or is it only with IRL family and friends? If it's the former, is there any way to ensure you don't get stolen from? This is a great question, because even if you're not... this goes for just even traditional betting partnerships where you're not taking ownership or control of the account, because you could be sending somebody, you know, sending somebody money to bet with. And the answer is no, you could definitely get stolen from, and you might, and you probably will, but that's fine. See, here's the thing. Like, so many people, if I'm like, oh yeah, you know, I sent this guy, you know, this guy bet all this golf and he has like 30K of our money or something. And somebody from, you know, a different walk of life might be like, oh my God, like, but what if he steals from you? And it's like, yeah, I mean, hopefully by the time he's gotten to that level, we have a relationship. But what you do is you keep a small balance, right? Keep a small balance to start if you're to meet someone online. And certainly we've worked with people we've met online. Most actually, like, I would say one of the biggest factors of our success are we've almost only worked with people we met IRL, and we're like kind of our own movers, and we've tried to keep our info pretty tight to the chest, so we don't really work with many people outside of our personal circle. But if you do, and this goes for people in your circle too, because they could also steal from you. Now, they're way less likely because there is a level of reputational pressure on them that if they're in your close circle, if they steal from you, they're basically kind of putting a price on their reputation in that circle of friends that you have or family, right? So it would be very hard for them to justify taking, you know, $10,000 from you. It just wouldn't be worth it, most likely. If it's someone random online, yeah, maybe, you know, especially if you're pretty new to meeting them. But, and the thing is, you won't get, and you can get stolen from. There's no way to just magically make it like you'll never get stolen from. And if you're so worried about getting stolen from that it inhibits you from growing, networking, getting more outs, expanding your operation, it will kill you. It will kill you. And it will be such a bad decision to let that fear stop you from making a lot of money. Because, yeah, let's say you get rolled 5% of the time. And since you don't let the balances grow big with people that you don't really know that well, you only get rolled for, you know, 5% of your total bankroll. But your bankroll over that year, because you've been growing, getting outs, building your operation, meeting people, like 3x's. Okay, well, think about losing 5% of your initial bankroll, $5,000 if it was like 100K, but you grew your bankroll 300K. It's like, it's nothing. It's a rounding error at the end of it. So, and this is something that I've actually, so having come up in poker and kind of been involved in the space, I've never been too nitty about this or too worried about it. Like I've been stolen from. And I mean, literally I got rolled by units for 35K. Like, and they're like a quote unquote company. And that was, you know, a couple months ago. Fine. You know, like that's okay. And that's going to happen. If you're so worried about never getting stolen from, you're gonna limit your upside. You should get stolen from a tiny percentage of the time, at least, to be optimal. I think there was a great tweet I retweeted pretty recently from this account I really like. I think it's like Massive Arbor or something. And he said the optimal amount of time, the optimal percentage to not get paid by a bookie isn't zero. So like, if you're only getting in situations where you're 100% sure you're going to get paid, you're probably not taking enough risk and putting yourself in enough good situations. Now, this doesn't mean be careless, but it means that to grow in this game and make a lot of money, you're going to have to take some risks, and you're going to have to accept the fact that someone could just take your money, walk away, and there's nothing you can do. Period. And that's okay, right? So just remember that. And that's okay. It will be okay. Do not let that get in the way of growing your betting operation. All right, we got another P2 question from Strategic Profit. This is from a different view, from a different standpoint. What is the best process to become a betting partner to help sharps get more money down? What do you think the pros and cons of this could be for a fairly new bettor? It's a really good question. It's really good. I actually, it's weird because, we'll often go ask our friends, do we have people that come to us? Yeah, like if we don't know somebody, they might come to us and we'll just say no. Or even if we do, we usually say no. But, well, I mean, one thing, the best process, so the thing you need no matter what is accounts. So, are you gonna come to a Sharp and say, "Oh, I have a BetOnline account and a Hard Rock account"? Okay, I mean, maybe if they're just kind of starting out, they might, want to play using your Hard Rock account if they have a good angle. But most likely, it's really good to have enough accounts, and this could just be, living in a good state like Illinois or something where you're gonna have, or you could be in North Carolina where they're opening up right now, where you could have, all the legals, having Circa if there's nobody, if the Sharp doesn't have Circa in their state is helpful, and any PPH accounts you can kind of get your hands on, then you start to become a lot more valuable. So before you even, I would say like approach, I don't even know if approaching someone is the best idea. I think it is. I think probably it is. Then what I would do is I would come to them with some accounts because they're going to ask you that. That's literally the first thing I would ask you if you were like, "Hey, I want to get down for you." I would be curious to know, what that entails. So, if you're just starting out, maybe it's someone that is a good bettor right now that's kind of on the verge of leveling up past being an individual bettor and looking to expand into betting partnerships and kind of more of a syndicate level play or like a mini syndicate. So that's going to be getting to know people in Discords, on Twitter, and having an understanding of what a smart, solid bettor sounds like and what they don't sound like. One thing that's pretty common is just ask for some betting receipts from them so you know some, previous plays. But you have to know a way of judging if those are good or bad plays, not necessarily if they win or they lose. You're more interested in seeing like what they played, and if you have somebody who can kind of check those, send them to someone who's good in the space, you can be like, "Oh, okay, like this is interesting," or, "Oh, these are just, data golf plays," or something like that, right? So you'd like to see some kind of sample of their work, or just through talking to them, like understand, know that they are sharp, and you've can make that determination on your own. That's ultimately up to you. But you probably want to partner up if you're new, probably partner up with someone who's a bit newer. You can grow with them, and there might be more opportunity there, more opportunity there than just being like, 10 accounts out of 3,000 accounts that like Spanky has or something. And one pro of this is if they are sharp, you can see what they're betting and you can make that connection and get them to interact with you. And you can ask them questions. Like, it's interesting because not many of the people that we work with are interested in betting, and that's by design. So they don't really ask me many questions, which is also great because, you have limited time, and I would probably feel some social pressure to respond to all my runners' questions. So, ideal situation, they don't really care about betting, they don't ask me questions. That's wonderful. But, if you're looking to improve as a bettor and you end up partnering up with someone who's had some success and has something to teach you, you have a direct line of communication to them. That's probably worth more than the money you're going to make on their plays if they're actually very thoughtful person, can teach you how to win at betting and can, you know, show you the ropes and help you avoid making some mistakes that you would have made if you were doing this on your own. That could be really, really valuable. Plus, they give you that intro into the world where they're going to have a lot of connections, and you really just kind of need that first intro in, establish your reputation, and kind of get your feet wet or whatever. And then if you do a good job, you can grow your network a lot by just having that one connection. So I wouldn't even worry too much about winning a ton playing their bets. If you have if you have designs on actually learning this and getting involved, it's a pretty solid way to start out. You know, you might burn some accounts, but you know, maybe one day you'll be the sharp and someone will be getting you accounts, or you'll get really good at getting accounts and you'll grow that business, right? So it's a good foot in the door. And you know, I think there was a thread that was like, what would you do? What advice would you give to losing bettors? And I think it was BA Analytics said, like, give accounts. Agree with that, because all of a sudden now you have, you know, you can make some money betting and you don't have the accounts to lose money betting, right? So it's like kind of this great way to turn from a losing bettor into a winning bettor is just give your accounts to sharps, right? So it's never a bad idea, especially if you're not a winner. But you know, make sure you know who you're working with, because you don't want it to be a colossal waste of time. That's more important than any lost potential profits you might have by letting them play through you. It's more important to have a healthy, you know, have a relationship that's gonna help your growth in the industry. And certainly don't, I would hesitate to ever put your own money down for them unless they're like rock solid reputation and they have like a voucher or something. I'd be very, very careful, very, very careful there of letting them play on your dime on credit, basically. And then we have the last question is also by Newbie Bets. What are your thoughts on betting on player fantasy scores on DFS apps? Haven't experimented with them myself, but OJ seems to mark a lot of them as plus EV. I don't play these, but my gut is that they're not properly accounting for the abnormal distribution of fantasy scores. So I don't know like what goes into fantasy scores or not, but I imagine parts of it are highly correlated, and it's definitely not going to be something you can model with like a Poisson distribution at all. I mean, it's not like a single counting, you know, it's not like strikeouts or anything. So my guess is they're just not properly modeling it. And I would be very hesitant to play those, especially if they mark a lot of them as plus EV. That starts to feel like they're just wrong, and they're using like whatever they did for distributions for like strikeouts and shots and goal for fantasy score, which definitely will not work. And I would just avoid, or actually what I would do is I would look into it and see if you can model it yourself, because if they're doing it wrong and a lot of people are playing their fake plus EV lines, then you could kind of fly under the radar. And they could even hammer lines your way, playing the wrong stuff, and you can go opposite and kind of what I would say, you wouldn't stand out as much because you wouldn't be playing the same exact thing as, you know, 1,000 other people. So could be a good situation to attack. Like if a popular whatever you want to call Odds Jam or Data Golf or you know, whatever. Like, they're not tipsters, they're not touts. But like, if a popular data service or a popular place where people get plays is systematically wrong about something, that's really, really useful if you know that. Really useful. Because you get like this great like reverse, you can get like negative CLV and win, or you know when the market's gonna move even more in the direction you wanna play, and you can wait for that, or you basically know exactly what's going on. You have it down to a T. You can predict pretty much all the movement in the market. If like the most popular market mover has gotten something, the most popular public tout market mover has gotten something wrong, that's really valuable. So my recommendation would be figure it out yourself and go make some money. So can leave it on that. We always like to end on making some money. So thanks everybody. If you made it this far, I love doing these episodes. Thanks for the questions, everybody. It's, these were really good. And I think a lot of the stuff, is very timely and useful to talk about, not just for, whoever's listening, but I love talking about this stuff and kind of working it out in my own brain. So thanks again. Yeah, check out GP Academy, you know, check it out. I guess it's in soft launch. I haven't really posted too much about it, but we got a strong crew in there, you know, learning how to bet instead of doing a traditional like picks or odd screen service. So it's been fun starting that out. Join us if that sounds of interest to you. And if it doesn't, just keep listening, and I'll see you on the next episode.